You're listening to the Mission Ridge Church Podcast. Mission Ridge is a new church in Missoula, Montana. You can visit us online at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in.
We are going to dive into James chapter 4. We're 4 weeks into our James series, and Logan started us off with James chapter 1. Paul covered James chapter 2 and 3 the last 2 weeks. All of our sermons are online, so if you miss a sermon, if you're like, wow, that's interesting, I'd like to know more, let me back up and hear week one and dive into week two or week three, those are available online. You can actually listen to it right there through your web app, or if you enjoy podcasts and you listen regularly, you can actually subscribe through all the major providers. As a review, the book of James was written by a Jew and is written to Jews. And these are followers of Christ. And the source that James pulls from over and over and over again throughout the book is Leviticus, Psalms, and the words of Jesus. So James isn't just pulling these thoughts out of random places, but he's tying people of the text back to the text. And the more that we can know about the text, the better off we are in understanding and hearing accurately what was being communicated for the first time 2,000 years ago. This book has had a special place in my life for over 20 years. It starts off with, "Consider it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials." Heard that sermon 22, 23, 24 years ago. Some of you weren't even alive. I won't hold that against you. When James says various trials, the term for various is, the Greek term is poikilos. It's a Greek word that we get polka dots, the term polka dots. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it's funny, one, that that's the term. But when we face various colored, different types of struggles, challenges, that's what James is talking about. And that's why I can relate to this book, because I don't know about you, but I've faced different colors and different types of challenges. In fact, the last 2 years have been very challenging for my family, and as I've looked at this book, as Paul and Logan and I have wrestled over this as a staff to figure out what is James trying to say and how do we communicate it, it's ministered to me a lot. But I want to give you a little bit of backdrop to why it's meant so much to me this month. 2 years ago, at Thanksgiving, my dad had been dealing with one cancer for 7 years and another cancer for about 6 months. So he's dealing with two different types of cancers, and we know there's not a lot of holidays that we're going to have left together. But my dad wasn't totally my dad that Thanksgiving day because dementia has started to set in. And my dad decelerated quickly over the next, within 30 days of Thanksgiving, we were trying to have a conversation with my dad about moving into a home where he could be safe, and that was one of the hardest conversations that I've ever had with a person. And then within another 30 days, my dad was gone. This is the first loss that I experienced personally that wasn't a grandma or a grandpa. This was someone that was really close to me. I mean, it was the closest person I've ever lost. And I'm trying to figure out how to process that myself and walk my family through that process too as they process losing grandpa. And then Joy, immediately after that, she starts dealing with these different medical concerns one after another. And over and over again, we're going to the ER. And over and over and over again, we're going to Spokane from Moscow, Idaho, to see specialists. And we actually had to see two different specialists, and she had three distinct problems that led to headaches and nausea, where she was basically in bed most of the time. And then in the midst of this, my mom's health starts to deteriorate again. She had one good year, and it was the year that she took my dad's last year out of my mom's last 7 years. She had one good year. And so her health starts to deteriorate. And so now I'm trying to not only help my mom mourn the loss of her husband and best friend for, you know, over 30 years, but I'm trying to care for her needs from afar and trying to figure that out. And so we're going to Spokane, we're going to Coeur d'Alene from Moscow, Idaho, and all these trips, and it's costing us a ton in the process. And as soon as Joy gets healthy, then we find out Jasmine has a cyst in her spine, and we know that we need to go see a neurosurgeon in Seattle a week after. Like, the diagnosis was in Oregon, and they said, you see a neurosurgeon next week. That's how urgent it was. She was starting to lose functions of her legs and just everything below her waist on down. She was having problems. Surgery after surgery after surgery after surgery. We knew it was going to be complicated. ER visit after ER visit after ER visit, watching my little girl with extreme pain. And having my mom in the hospital and my daughter in the hospital in two separate states. And financially, and various colors of trials. And then God decides to move us to Missoula. And we love it here. But then there's another color of trial, because our house in Moscow hasn't sold. And so we get the blessing of living with brand new friends and figuring that out. At one point, we had our family was spread out between three homes. And I don't know what God's doing. One of the great questions we see James dealing in this book is, how do we act when things are hard? And there's financial stresses, relationships that are broken, when dealing with sickness, the loss of a loved one. How do we act, church? How do we act, Mission Ridge? So let's get into it. What causes quarrels and causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and don't receive because you ask with wrongly to spend it on your passions. So we see James identify a couple coping mechanisms that we run to when things are challenging, when we're facing various trials. Fighting and arguing is one of the most common things. Flight, fight, or freeze. You've maybe heard that term. These are coping mechanisms. And James is addressing this. He says, your passions are out of control. You know, when I was dealing with all these financial issues for 18 months, we were under intense financial pressure. And then Christy would come to me, and she wisely came to me when the kids were not around, and she would say, your son needs this, your daughter needs that. And I'm all excited. I'm mad that there's another need that I have to address. But I had to come back to the fact that their needs were as important as every other need that we were dealing with. That just because things were hard didn't mean that their needs stop having. So my need to be in control, my desire to be in control of life, I was putting that over people. And when we put even really good desires, desire for love or acceptance, for taking care of the environment, when we take our desires, even valid desires, but put them above people, we start running into problems. James continues, "You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose it is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealously over the spirit that he made to dwell in us?" Wow, you adulterous people. What is James doing here? Well, we have to understand a couple things about the Jewish people. First and foremost, they saw when God brought them out of Egypt and they're at Mount Sinai, they talk about Mount Sinai as being their wedding day. And their time in the desert, the 40 years, that was their honeymoon. That was them getting to know their husband. And throughout the Old Testament, the prophets would use this term, you adulterous people, you adulterers. He'd use this term to kind of wake them up, to call them back to himself. He's saying, don't chase after false idols, false gods. Don't chase after the other nations. Don't be adulterous. They can't give you what I can give you. And Jesus, when he spoke to his disciples, he used wedding language too. We're called the bride of Christ. And so James borrows this Old Testament method of just waking us up, calling us back to Jesus. Now, he uses this phrase, friendship with the world is enmity with God. The word for friendship is phileo. It's where we get the Philadelphia. And I mean, it's friendship. It's a good word. Like, having friends is a healthy thing. The thing is, though, once you're married, those relationships should look different. And so I think that's something that that James is highlighting here. The word cosmos, the word for cosmos is the Greek word for world. And it's this idea of systems. It's not literally the earth. And it's not even the people. It's the systems that are in place that we look to. It's our political, our economic, our religious systems, our social systems. And those systems are good. They're helpful. They're even needed. But when we put those in a higher priority than our relationship with God, when we let our politics define how we relate with God, and instead of the other way around, we should let our relationship with God help us define our politics and how we relate in our politics. But even in our economics and like, is what are we depending on? I want to be clear what James is not talking about here. He's not talking about us isolating from the people of the world. He is not saying don't hang out with people down at the bar. He's not talking about man-made rules that Jesus broke through time and time again. Jesus was known for eating with sinners and tax collectors. And if we're going to be like Jesus, then we need to engage with people like Jesus did. We need to have open arms to allowing anybody come walking through the door. When I was in the military, after I retired, I looked back on the way I looked at my career. And initially, I looked at my career, I saw it as God had blessed me. God was blessing me and giving me new opportunities to grow and to lead and do new things. I saw God's hand in that. But eventually, it got to the point to where I started becoming dependent on the system. like the system was where my blessing came from. And James would say, Rob, don't be adulterous. Friendship with the world is not helpful. In verse 6, he says, but he gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourself, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Now, James softens his tone a little bit here. And when he talks about resisting the devil, we should picture Jesus and the way Jesus responded to different temptations. We know for sure that for 40 days there were specific, Jesus specifically was tempted, but we know that Satan would tempt him other times, would use circumstances to tempt him. And we should look at the way Jesus faced his trials and his temptations, his struggles, and let those speak to us. Now, James does something interesting here. When he says God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble, he actually quotes a worship song, Psalm 138. He quotes one of the lines. I want to read this together. I want you guys to read this with me. And when we read this together, I want you to be thinking about one of your struggles this week and what this worship song might mean to you in that. So read this with me. I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. I bow down towards your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness. For you have exalted above all things your name and your word. On the day I called, you answered me. My strength of soul you increased. All the kings of the earth shall give you thanks, O Lord, for they have heard the words of your mouth. And they shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. For though the Lord is high, he regards the lowly, but the haughty he knows from afar. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve my life. You stretch out your hands against the wrath of my enemies, and your right hand delivers me. The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. Your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. I love that last line. The purpose of the Lord will fulfill his purpose in me. And that's, you know, for Christy and I, that was one of the great questions we wrestled with these last couple years. Like, God, what are you doing in these hard times? And as when we worshiped and as when we engaged with God's, like, we start building this pattern of worship into our lives over and over and over again, because we needed to be reminded of what God was saying, because our experiences were telling us a bunch of garbage. There was even a point to where I was working at a church in Moscow, a church that Paul Logan and I came from, and I had to step down with what was going on with my mom, and I wasn't sure how long she was going to live and what was going on with Jasmine. I wasn't even sure if I was going to be in town. And so they asked, they created a different position for me, and I stepped down from the pastoral position that had only been for a few years. And like all kinds of questions came up. And that's all right. But some of the best answers came when I engaged in God's word through worship, when I would celebrate God for who he was, regardless of the fact that I couldn't see what the next thing was. So I think there's more going on here in verses 6 and 7. We'll come back to that. In verse 8, James says this, draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. He says, cleanse your hands. Now, when I worked my dad's transmission shop, when you're going to do dirty work, you just left your hands dirty because there's only so many rags. And when you are all done with the dirty work, you're going to go out on a date or I don't know, do homework. That wasn't me. But when it's time to do something different, that's when you washed your hands. And I think what James is saying is, guys, it's time to wash your hands of some of these coping mechanisms that are not helpful. They're not helping. They're not helping you face what you're facing. And washing the hands from a Jewish perspective, it's a ceremonial thing. It's kind of similar to baptism for us. It's this picture that tells the world that I want to clean what's in on the inside. But James invites his readers to not just show the world that you're doing something, but actually do something. Actually clean, like, let's do some business with God with what's going on in our heart. And when he says, be wretched and mourn and weep, let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. I picture my days in college because I couldn't do any of these things when I was in college. I don't know if you had the same experiences in college that I had. When I would fail a test, I'd come home, tell my buddies, hey, fail a test. And what did we do? Partied. We partied. Break up with a girlfriend. What do? We partied. Someone else broke up with a girlfriend. Yeah, partied. I did not know how to sit in the mess. I did not know how to sit there and contemplate what is going on here. What do I need to change? I didn't mourn the loss of receiving an F on a test because I didn't do my best. I didn't mourn the loss of how I didn't make a relationship feel safe and inviting. I ignore those things. And James is inviting us to actually dive into this. And James brings up God and humility again. Like it's the second time he brings it up, almost like it's a bookend. We'll come back to that. But he goes on and says this, do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer, but a judge. There's only one lawgiver and judge. He was able to save and to destroy, but who are you to judge your neighbor? And as I've wrestled with this passage for the last month, do you want to know where these couple verses keep coming up for me? It's typically on reserve. Sometimes on Russell, usually at a green light, my green light that someone just ran their red light to, you know, hold me up. Have anybody else noticed that some people run red lights in this town? And there is something that jumps out of me in those moments. My kids, well, Christy says that when she follows me, she hears my voice. Or when she's sitting at a stop sign and she's not sure if she should go or not, she hears my voice. Oh, man, the Lord has been dealing with me this last month. It's been a painful month for me. But I honestly think that this is why we have road rage. People want people to pay, and they don't have a, you know, they don't have a pen and a ticket book, and so they're going to make them pay some other way. When I speak evil against a brother, when I judge, I focus on what they do wrong, and I have to ignore or downplay what I do wrong. And James says, you're speaking evil against the law. Man, I'm a pastor. How do I do that? I shouldn't. Just like last week's sermon, blessing and cursing shouldn't come from the same mouth. I want to be a blessing to this community. I want to love those red light runners. And oh, by the way, I'm one of them too. Like I've run a few red lights in my lifetime, you know, and even the last month. So like I can't be judging. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade, and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this or we'll do that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. And just like judging and blaming, here's more coping mechanisms that James identifies. When we're facing various trials, do we start boasting? Do we start making plans for leaving, for avoidance? Paul's back there raising his hand. So, when faced with trials and challenges, do you trust God's timing, his provision, that he cares? And in the last 2 years, I've questioned every one of those things. And God has answered. Now, I want to go back and look at that middle section because I think I found it interesting. Like, it took me almost a month of wrestling with this to see what God is doing in all this. So we're going to look at verses 6 through 10 again. But when James uses the word humble, when he uses the word humble in verses 6 and 10, he's using a word that was first used in Genesis 15. And this is that verse. Then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted. They'll be afflicted. They will be humbled. That word afflicted, it's the same word. They'll be afflicted for 400 years. We usually think in terms of prophecy as being a good thing, right? James uses the same word. So we, from the Greek Septuagint, which was what they would have read, the diaspora, the people that were dispersed, they would have read that as their Bible. And this is the word. And James is wondering, will you humble yourself even if you don't know when the timetable will run out? Will you humble yourself even though you aren't in control of how long this is going to take place? In fact, you may not even see the end of it. When trials and challenges come, will you humble yourself? But there's a chiasm in here. There it is. And this, James says so much through this structure. It's mind-boggling. Like, it's pretty cool what he does in this little section. It took a long time of wrestling even to notice it. Like, I'm going, you're doing something. What is it? So the A part, God opposes proud but gives grace to the humble. So God in humility is brought up in part A. A prime down here at the bottom, humble yourself before the Lord. So humility and the Lord are right there. So these are the two bookends. And this is what we're going to call a humble sandwich. Somehow humility includes submitting yourself before God. Resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. And somehow, point B is connected to the other point B. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Somehow, when we choose to sit in our own mess or sit in the mess with our neighbor, we experience God. And that's how we actually draw near to God, when we're willing to face, and I've seen alcoholics do this. They finally face their past. They sit in the mess of what's happened to them, their decisions, other people's decisions. When they do that, they start experiencing God. And it's miraculous. It's amazing. And it's cool. And when we choose to sit in a mess with other people, when we choose to go to jail to visit someone or to the hospital, when we choose to be there in those moments, when we open up our doors for a family that you just barely met, somehow we experience God in that. But there's also a connection between clenching your hands, you sinners, to submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Like when you make the decision to start washing your hands of your past and to be done with that, God is right there. He wants to meet you right there, right then. And there's a connection between purify your hearts, you double-minded. Like it's to purify your hearts, you double-minded is connected to the bottom B section here. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. That's actually when our hearts actually start being cleansed. That's when that cleansing starts to take place. And it's good. So this is how humility is how we get beyond the fighting, the self-preservation, the judging, the blaming, the avoidance, the boasting. This is a better way of coping. And we're going to get into our implications. Implication number one, life is full of challenges. How we respond to the challenges reveals what already exists in our hearts. My passions were out of control yesterday, and I was having a hard time communicating well with my wife. I was mad. What was going on there? She didn't make that. It already existed in my own heart. I need to sit in that. I need to figure that out. I need to allow God to help me cleanse my heart. Implication two. All of us have unhealthy coping mechanisms. Godly community leads us to better ways of coping. We need each other. We need this worship time. We need time together in our small groups. We need accountability. I need men in my life to say, hey, Rob, how you doing with this? How you doing with talking to your wife this week? How you doing online? Our wives need that community too. We need each other. I need you. You need me. Number three, humility sits in the mess, learns from it, doesn't try to hide from it. In turn, humility experiences God in the mess. The last 2 years have been so challenging. Watching my daughter suffer in pain, watch my mom suffer in pain, watch my dad lose to dementia, all the financial struggles, all those things, changing roles at the church, moving, coming here. Hardest 2 years of my life. God did miracle after miracle after miracle. We are not the same. Not a one of us in our family is the same. And I would not exchange that time for anything. I hope to never go through it again. I wouldn't trade it. Because I got to experience God. We're inviting you into community that will sit in the mess, we'll sit in together. I know it's hard, but let's experience God together. Real faith is humble. Is our final implication. Yeah, I got cool things to say about that, but I won't. Go ahead and come and grab the elements.
You've been listening to the Mission Ridge Church Podcast. Mission Ridge is a new church in Missoula, Montana. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit us online at missionridge.church. If you are in the Missoula area, we would love to meet you. We hold service at the Hilton Garden Inn Conference Center on Sundays at 10:30 a.m. We would love to have you join us. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.